Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 138. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, take a moment, leave us a 5-star rating and review. It takes less than 60 seconds, and it helps us go up in the rankings, helps us to reach more people and spread this message all over the world. Also, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this on. I'll really appreciate it. And if you leave a 5-star rating and review, I'll read it on the show. A few other announcements. So as you know, if you've been following the show, we've been releasing episodes 3 times per week. So our regular episodes on Mondays, Wednesday have been our mashup, and Friday has been our community highlight. We're going to change the structure starting this week. So Monday we'll have our regular episodes. Wednesday, the new name for that segment will be the Investor Highlight. And then Friday will be called Closing Day. Wednesday, the Investor Highlight will be a clip, a straight game from a previous episode to get you through the middle of the week. And then Friday will be Closing Day, closing out the week strong with another great clip from a previous episode. So slight change to the structure and the names of those other segments, but still delivering game, still delivering massive value. So looking forward to debuting those this week. Really enjoyed this interview. You guys are going to learn a whole lot from it. Trust me, we're just live in LA. So get your seatbelts on. Let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you haven't already, take a moment to subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. If you're on a podcast platform, leave us a 5-star rating and review. I will shout out all 5-star rating and reviews. So looking forward to hearing from you. Very excited about this episode today. I have the brothers from the Haltier Group here with me. They own about 300 and something units. I can't even keep count. We spoke about it before and about 20 million worth of property. So brothers, introduce yourselves. Let the people know who you are and what you do. Let's start with Anthony.
Thank you. First and foremost, thank you for having us here. We definitely appreciate it. I am Anthony Tabor. I'm 1/4, as you'll see, of the Haltier Group. I'm a mortgage professional by trade, primarily residential mortgages. And throughout the course of the Haltier Group, I help a lot of the investors refinance their homes, understand how to utilize their equity, et cetera. And I also oversee the social media for the team.
My name is Ennis Williams, also 1/4 of the Haltier Group here. In my kind of day-to-day, I own my own registered investment agency, so I'm a financial advisor. And what I do is I virtually help clients understand if this is the right fit for them in terms of, you know, syndication. Does it fit their portfolio? Do we need to move, you know, money, maybe stock options and things like that? Maybe, you know, utilize some of the money that they may have invested in other places if it makes more sense to invest in real estate. So I kind of give advice on those things and help make sure that some of our clients that are looking for something find what they need.
Dennis Earls. I'm a commercial real estate broker. I have 29 years in the industry, been a part of over 300 transactions, north of $3 billion of real estate. My role within the Haltier Group is similar to a quarterback. I identify the asset, broker the asset, deal with investors, hand off the third party legal, third party financial, and then interact with my partners in terms of their specialty within the field, to assist the company grow.
My name is Marsh Seed Hatcher. My background is in civil engineering, construction management. Throughout my career, I've played a part in around $15 to $20 billion of construction around the world. In my 9-to-5, I lead a construction and real estate advisory practice for a global Big Four company. And 1/4 of the managing principals here with the Haltier Group. How my background translates into what I do with the Haltier Group, pretty much manage our renovations, our rehabs, future development projects, et cetera. So very happy to have a discussion with you today.
Definitely. Absolutely. So it's a lot of money in the building.
We're trying.
So one misconception is that Black people don't work together. You four have definitely formed a great company together. So we'd love to hear more about how that came together and why you guys decided to start the Haltier Group.
Sure, I'll take that one. I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, ballpark, Dennis and I connected and we started buying some properties. We did a couple flips, et cetera, et cetera. Over the years, Marcide and I started doing it as well, you know, bring him in on a deal or two with Dennis and I, et cetera. And then at the beginning of COVID, actually, we were just having a kind of round the table conversation. I was like, hey, what are we doing? Like, why don't we take it to the next level, utilize all our skill sets, et cetera, and put it together? And at that time, Marcide said, hey, wait, I got one more piece of the puzzle. he brought his line brother in, Ennis, to the table. And it, I'm old. I refer to it as Voltron.
and it formed Voltron. So,
you're dating yourself.
That's what I said. I'm old. So the four of us, you know, we all were on the same page. We saw it the same. We, you know, not to be a cliche, we started finishing sentences and all of that stuff, and it just made sense. And we just took the opportunity of the world being shut down to build something and start.
Yeah. And I would say the most important piece of that is that, you know, we drop our egos at the door. You know, you hear about our experience that we have out there in our respective industries, but dropping our egos at the door, listening to each other, you know, taking ideas from each other. I think that has kept us, you know, in a very good space and with a bright future ahead of us.
Definitely. And you mentioned just the beginning of the pandemic and getting started then. That was a time where people were terrified and scared to spend anything anywhere. And it seems like you're kind of back in those times now financially. So what was it that gave you all the courage to start investing and start this new company during a time where the world was just turbulent?
I think we just all recognized the opportunity, right? I think we're all professionals in our individual fields. And I think just understanding that a lot of people did a lot of great things in the time of bad things happening, right? More recently, you know, the kind of the 2008 collapse and things like that, right? So understanding that when things go bad like that, it's not an opportunity to just like run and tuck your tail, but it's actually an opportunity for you to make moves, right? Make changes. And if you can really think about it and come out of it on the other side saying that we did something positive, then that's where our mindset was, that this is an opportunity for growth. Like there's things out there, availability out there, for us to make these changes and also bring other people along with us, right? I think one of the biggest things is that we wanted to make sure that we educated and brought people along in the way and just gave them the knowledge that we had, right? So what better way to do it? Group economics, right? And that's kind of how we decided to move forward with that.
Definitely. And it's interesting because, you know, something I try to tell people too is like, when people are scarce, right now interest rates are sky high, right? Mm-hmm. But do you think, I mean, y'all are investors, of course, like I'm sure y'all are not backing down. Like y'all are still looking for opportunities, especially just blood in the streets, right?
So harder.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's important for people to know that y'all did that then and you're doing it now. Like there's always going to be opportunity. You know, it's just a matter of if you can find it, if it fits what you're looking for. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah. I think sometimes the interest rate conversation is interesting, especially for, you know, younger investors like that, right? Because they've grown up in a time where interest rates have been close to zero, right? For a very, very long time. So now that the interest rates are creeping up, it seems like it's like, oh my God, the world is ending. But when I bought my first house, right, I got interest rate at like 6.75 and I thought it was the best thing ever, right? Back in like 2007, right? So it was right before the crash then. So I think it's all relative to what you've experienced. And if you understand the history of it, then you understand that this is still a really good time to be doing things, even though the interest rates have crept up in ways that, you know, may seem, you know, astronomical for some. Others are still like, no, there's opportunity here. Mm-hmm. And you just have to make sure you understand, you know, what's available.
Proper planning is, I think, is the biggest thing that we find success in. You know, yes, the interest rates are going up, whether it be on residential or in commercial lending, but we spend a lot of time scrubbing deals, Dennis especially, you know, going through all of the bits and pieces, where the cash flow is, how we can increase rents, how we can do et cetera, to offset the increase of rates. And I think because of the proper planning, we're continuously able to succeed.
Definitely. That gets into the next thing I want to talk about. So, you know, a lot of people, 1 to 4 units is kind of straightforward. You know, you might get your FHA loan or NACRA or whatever program you use, and y'all are doing like the big deals, syndications. And it's something that goes over a lot of people's heads. Like, I know a lot of our listeners, it's something they're interested in, but it just feels like kind of out of reach. So can you break down just what a syndication is at a fundamental level?
Sure. Syndication at a fundamental level is a group of investors getting together, pooling their money together to buy a larger asset that they wouldn't have been able to buy alone, right? So it's the piece of in bringing that money together, investing that money in a larger asset, taking said asset, and then paying distributions to the investors at a certain amount, right? In the way in which ours is set up, there's general partners and limited partners, right? We're the general partners, our investors are limited partners, and quarterly, our limited partners get a distribution. At the end of the year, they get their K-1 statements. At the end of the term with the property, they'll either get the equity via refinance or sale, right? So that's how our syndication is set up. That's how, you know, kind of the easiest way to explain exactly what it is. It's an investment into a large asset through group economics.
Can I chime in real quick? Yeah, just to piggyback on that. I think for us, large scale, syndication is just a foreign word, but we see it all the time. The crypto.com or Staples Center is a syndication. Every large building that you drive by is a syndication. Every sports team is a syndication, typically. So it's just putting it in a real world application on this level. And I think once people understand that, it expands their mind and it makes sense.
Definitely. And Dennis, I know you're looking at a lot of the deals. So, you know, again, 1 to 4 unit is kind of straightforward what you're looking at. You're looking at your mortgage expenses, rent, whatever. What are the factors you're considering when you're evaluating if one of these, you know, 80, 100 unit buildings is a good deal?
You know, the process of identifying asset 1 to 4 unit is no different than 50 to 100 units, right? It's just a larger building, but the financial mechanics are the same, right? We are looking at Class C type buildings, right? We're looking at blue collar type residents, right? We're looking at those tenant profile that is looking for a habitable place to live, a safe place to live, responsible landlords that are addressing their needs within a 24-hour window. We have targeted the southern states of the United States, rather the southern region, because we're finding significant cash flow in that part of the country, right? We're looking for 7-cap deals, right? We're looking for double-digit cash-on-cash returns. Mm-hmm. We're looking for assets where we have the ability to purchase at a 7-cap and increase the rents to where they go to an 8, 9, 10-cap, to where we're increasing the rents for the building, which enhances the value of the real estate asset, right? Mm-hmm. It's also important for investors to know you have your actual rent, which is where the building is when you buy it, and you want to increase those rents to get to market rent. So for example, if you buy the asset where it's $700 per month in rent, but yet your neighbor around the corner is $800, well, that's the market rent. We want to slowly, creatively increase those rents to where it increases the value of the asset.
Love it. Just a couple of follow-ups. When you say like 7-cap, like, can you explain what that means?
It's a cap ratio. So essentially it's a financial metric to where if you as the investor bought a building cash, it would be a 7% return on your dollar.
Got it.
Right. I won't go too far into the mathematics for our guest today.
That makes sense. And then cash on cash return, like, can you explain what that is and what your target typically is?
Absolutely. So cash on cash return is the difference between the rents and your expenses.
Got it.
All right. The difference is your cash on cash return.
Perfect.
You know, you can find investments at 3% returns in the market, right? And it's going to speak to that. Or treasuries, right? We're looking for something that's paying our investors north of 6%.
Perfect. Perfect. And what is the criteria for investors?
Great question.
You know, let's say, you know, hey, Sam, Anthony, what's going on? I'm trying to get in one of these deals. Like, what is that conversation like? Like, what do I need to be part of it?
Yeah. We started off strategically, essentially on a friends and family level, like most businesses. And by doing that, we decided to start at a $10,000 per share, if you will. So what we do is we look at the cost of acquisition and so forth to acquire the building. And then we break that up into shares at a dollar amount of $10,000 per share. Each individual can buy one share or, you know, 50 shares, 100 shares, et cetera. And then everything from there is paid out accordingly. So when we pay out distributions, you're paid based on how many shares you own according to the payout. When it's time to sell the building, the same thing, you would get your pro rata share of the equity, et cetera.
And I'm going to add on, yeah, I think our profile is anyone and everyone that wants to learn about real estate, right? We want to, you know, Ennis tapped on it earlier. It's about education. We want to educate those to enhance their individual profiles, to better their lives, right? To learn a different way on how to invest your dollars in real estate. You don't have to do it as an individual. You are stronger as a collective, right? So anyone and everyone who wants to know and learn more about real estate is someone who the Halterra Group is interested in talking to. Now, obviously, there's a certain buy-in for our projects. And as Anthony outlined, is $10,000 per share, with that investor allowed to purchase as many shares as he or she likes and can afford. But for us, even if you don't invest, we want to pass the information, because later is our understanding and ideals that you will become an investor, because our four as a collective is so knowledgeable in our individual space. And we're, you know, sharp black men, that, you know, we know what we're doing.
And I would say the only thing that wasn't mentioned is that you don't have to be accredited, because I know that's a common question that we get from a lot of investors. You don't have to be accredited to invest in one of our projects. So outside of that, I think the other two middle, they said it all.
We also encourage groups of people to invest together. Mm-hmm. If they don't have the 10 total, you know, we've had groups of sisters participate or cousins participate, et cetera, to form an LLC, et cetera. So going back to the education part, we'll also walk them through that process if needed to understand this is how you form an LLC. This is how you create a business with your trusted circle, et cetera, et cetera. So we tried to remove as many limitations as possible.
Definitely. Love it. And Marcy, can you talk a little more about what the rehab looks like on these projects? Like the projects y'all are buying, are they mostly value add? And what does that look like as far as like coordinating the team and figuring out just how to get all that done?
Yeah, I would say it's all of them have been, you know, fairly much a value add opportunities for us, where we've been able to go in and apply like our just our look, right? We put new signage up. We rename our properties.
I noticed that.
we rename our properties, and everything is by Halterra. We really want our brand to be out there across the country. But you know, it's going into a unit, assessing what's in there. You know, new paint, new flooring, new cabinetry, and things like that. At the end of a lease term, of course, right? We're not going in and kicking people out of their units. But we're going into these properties looking for value add opportunities. So if it's additions to the laundry room areas, things that people don't typically think about, vending machines, that's something that we plan to do and implement going into 2023. All of our properties will have vending machines, as that's additional cash flow for us and for our limited partners that are in our properties. But as far as how we do it, we go into these markets. I actually, you know, I've been in this industry a while, so I have a lot of data as it relates to construction costs, you know, cost per square foot, things like that. for pretty much everything. So I'm able to go in and identify, you know, contractors in a particular area, apply the, you know, the general rules out there, the best practices, you know, three bids for each, you know, scope of work, and assess who could be best to work on our jobs and to actually manage that job going forward if we ever needed them in the future as well. And so, yeah, it's a pretty, you know, lengthy process in the beginning. But that investment in the front, it just works for us going forward as well. So we're able to pick up a phone call at any point of the day and call somebody and say, hey, I need you to help us out on the property. So.
Love it. Love it. And, you know, I want to get into some of the deals. But before that, you know, a lot of people see the success, right? So obviously, y'all have a massive, great portfolio, whole lot of real estate. I'm sure it's financially nice. What are some challenges that y'all have experienced over the last couple of years? I'm sure there's many. I know we kind of were talking a little bit before about the escrow situation happening right now, but if you're open to talking about that or anything else, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably all have, probably have our own.
let's hear it. We got time.
Start from the left and go to the right on that one.
Listen, I think some of the you know, just to start it off, I mean, the challenges are, you know, probably any landlord anywhere, right? You have tenant issues, you have, you know, sometimes people, you know, don't want to pay, do want to pay, have trouble paying, you know, things like that. You're dealing with real lives, right? Real people who have real struggles, right? So sometimes you've got to make those determining situations. Do we do this? Do we do that? And sometimes those, you know, it is, okay, we're going to have to evict, right? And, you know, it happens, right? You know, some of the things that have happened recently are, you know, weather, right? We had some situations out in some of our properties where, you know, had nothing to do with us, but it was like just natural disaster type stuff, right? But that's why, you know, you have things on the table such as insurances and things like that to kind of help facilitate some of those things and help make sure that, you know, your tenants are there, they have what they need. And that, you know, everything can be taken care of and you can still sleep at night because you are responsible for, you know, the habitation of a lot of people, right? In this whole thing. So, you know, those are just some of the things that come to mind off top in terms of just having this kind of growing massive portfolio of real estate and dealing with people on an everyday basis. So that's just one of the things that came to my mind. I don't know if you guys have some other.
I think another challenge is just dealing with the investor. Trust, right? There's a lack of trust within the community. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of trust with individuals releasing their dollars to individuals who they may or may not know, although those people may have 20 plus years of experience and know way more than you, right? So I think for us in creating the Halterra Group 2 years ago, look at our track record. We're close to 350 units in over 24 months, right? We started with friends and family purely because the larger investors wouldn't touch us because they didn't know who we were. Our brand, as Marcy mentioned, wasn't Coca-Cola,
yeah,
right? So we started with friends and family, moms and dads and cousins and aunts who knew us, who trusted us and gave us their check to start the company, and they reaped the benefits. And now everyone is starting to call us because now it's aha, right? They know what they're doing. Right. So anyone looking to start a syndicate or be in a syndication space, that is a challenge, an obstacle that you will have to overcome. I think a second obstacle that we face is, you know, dealing with lenders. Your paperwork has to be buttoned up. The I's have to be dotted and T's have to be crossed, mm-hmm. Because lenders are going to go through a thorough examination of you as the borrower and the asset itself before lending you the dollars to acquire the asset. So I would say trust within the investors and making sure your profile is tight with lenders.
Yeah, I would add from my point of view, it's been operational cost, right? So everybody knows it's a big thing out there, supply chain issues, right? You would think that wouldn't impact something like this, or you may be thinking that, but it does, right? So, you know, if I need a, I don't know, thinking about what one of my common issues right now, water heaters, right? Like water heaters are beginning to become a common issue on one of our properties. You would think I could just go down the street, purchase a new water heater, but no, this place is saying, hey, I won't have any until next week or whatever, just based off supply chain concerns. And then there's other random materials out there that are also having that same issue, the cost of goods, wood, and things like that, what happens? It impacts your cash flow at the end of the day, because now you're paying inflated costs for materials. Labor has also gone up as well. So you're paying inflated costs for labor. So things like that we typically, you know, we thought about, but the rate that it's increasing may not match what you've forecasted at any given time. Is definitely a challenge that we have adjusted for, and that we just have to continue to adjust for going forward. But from my point of view, I would definitely say that's been my number one challenge so far.
Yes. Actually, one of the questions I wanted to ask, like, how are you dealing with the supply chain issues, the cost of materials and labor going up? Like, how are you dealing with that in practice? I've heard a lot of people talking about the challenges that come with that. So I'd love to hear.
So for me and, you know, the area that I manage within the company, I try to buy in bulk now at this point. It's no longer like a one-off. My attic stock, where it used to be, let's just say 5% of the materials, has increased to, let's just say, probably 10 to 15%, just so we can have enough in the case there is a concern. And obviously, if you buy in bulk, hopefully your costs are a lot cheaper at that particular point, which it has been for us. So far, that's how we've been able to deal with it. Other times, it's having very honest conversations with the tenants and saying, hey, I won't have it for a couple of days. What can I do for you, you know, to make sure that you remain happy? If it's a situation where the tenant can't stay in the unit, you know, we'll get them a hotel room. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll make sure that they remain happy, make sure that they keep the trust in us. So that we can obviously keep them as a tenant going forward. So, you know, we have our creative strategies, things that have worked well in the business for years to come, stuff that we did not make up, but, you know, that we leverage that has worked for us so far.
It's also very honest conversations with your investors. Because he or she is going into a project anticipating a return of 9%, 8%, whatever percent. And with the cost of goods going up, that return has to decrease because obviously we're paying more than what we anticipated. Mm-hmm. So having that honest conversation with your investors when it's time to cut dividends and alerting them to the difficulties that has been for that previous quarter also makes your investor happy as well, because it's a trust factor that we built with not only the tenant, but also with your investor.
Right. That makes sense. And I had a couple of follow up questions for you. I know one of the things you mentioned was lending and some challenges that come with that. And that's actually one of the questions I was going to ask later on. Like when you think about, I mean, obviously it's not like a 5% down mortgage or something. So
no.
Can you talk about
residential? Yes. Yeah. Not in commercial.
Right.
Is so, 25% minimum.
Right. So can you break down just like how the financing of these kind of deals work?
Of course. Well, it's easier to acquire a commercial asset than it is a residential property, because if you think about it on its surface, in residential, the lender is looking at you as the individual. You know, where do you work? How much do you make? How long you've been on the job, et cetera, et cetera. They're looking at you because they want to make sure that you're able to pay that mortgage. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing the commercial space, the commercial asset generates income. So now the lender is saying, okay, well, the mortgage is $10,000 per month, but the gross rent collections is $40,000 per month, and your expenses are $15,000. It more than covers the debt service. So it's easier to qualify in the commercial space. Now, obviously, yes, you as the borrower, the guarantor, still have to have the FICO score and the this and the that, right? But, you know, in our experience, well, my experience as a broker and our experience as a company, you know, it's one of the reasons why we chose commercial real estate as our starting point rather than residential. Does not mean that we won't flip over to residential at some point, but the starting point was commercial because the barrier for entrance was easier for us to qualify for these assets.
It makes sense. The other follow-up question I have, you mentioned trust. Mm-hmm. And just how, you know, you got started out with family, with friends. So I can see, you know, a family, a friend taking a chance. And of course, as your track record improves, like you can get more people to join. But can you talk more about just like building that trust and what that conversation was like with those family and friends? And what it's like with new people to establish that trust?
Truth.
Yeah.
Honesty, right? Yeah. We're not salesmen. And we always tell our investors on the call, this is not a sales pitch. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? We would like for you as the investor to take a look at our documentation. We do a thorough analysis on our projects. We go through a 45 to 60 day due diligence window for all of our buildings where we are dissecting everything from structural, roof, HVAC, plumbing, electrical. We're tearing the Band-Aid off of the leases, 3 years operating data history. So we're looking at all of it. And then we are presenting this package to our investors in addition to our visual aids to make it easier for them to understand. And in addition to that, our individual bios and how we communicate to our investors, right? We are not, you know, car salesmen where we're on you every second while you're on the lot trying to open the door and smell the car smell, right? For us, it's more so, look, you know, this is not a pressure cooker here. This is information that we want you to have. You need to know this information. We are backing up this information with verifiable data. And after you check out this information with your advisors, your lawyer, your CPA, your financial advisor, et cetera, if your advisor still confirm what we're pitching, then cut the check and invest with us and let us do what we do.
I'm smiling because Dennis made it sound so, he made it sound so easy.
Yes, he did.
It was so not that easy for me.
It was not that easy for me.
But from my perspective, I mean, like I literally started with an email. I think a lot of us did, or all of us did at some point. It was an email that, you know, very articulate, had all the information in it. I sent that to a pretty broad population of folks that I know, family, friends, friends of friends, et cetera. And I was like, we all talk about this on a daily basis. We talk about Black excellence.
Yes.
We talk about, you know, generational wealth. We talk about, you know, all the hot topics, right? Like, how can we work together going forward? I was like, yo, I have the perfect platform. And before that, I think I also have the brand as well. Like, I'm not known out in my general circles or even outside to hustle people or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So come with a strong brand and reputation first off. But anyway, so I sent my email out. You know, I probably heard from maybe 30% of the people, which I think is a good, rate of return, right?
Yeah.
For people who, you know, want to hear more, because it was, you know, do you want to hear more? Cool. We jumped on the phone. That 30% of people, we jumped on a call over a few different weekends to have this conversation about the first opportunity. I would say about half of them said, yo, let's do this. Like, I want to move forward with this. Cool. I'm thinking like, this is amazing, right? For the first time we're doing this, this is going to be awesome. You know, we kept them in the loop as far as what was going on with the property. We get to the point where it's like, okay, guys, like now it's time to wire your money, right? You're not giving me a check, right? Like we don't move like that. We have a system. We have a bank account set up for each fund, et cetera. It's time to wire your money.
Wow. Crickets.
Crickets. Wow. Wait, what happened to everybody, right? So I'm like, my goodness. Okay, so this is going to be a little harder than I thought. I thought it was going to be smooth, but it was going to be a lot harder than I thought. But, you know, I say all that to say, yeah, when it gets time to wire the money, you see who's really serious about that. And so I think all of us have struggled with that at some point in our careers.
Yes.
But, you know, after so long, you know, you keep reaching out to people or you just reach out to different people. And you make it happen, right? And at that point, that's where you go into, it's not a sales opportunity. Look, guys, if you want to move forward, I'm not going to bother you. I'm not going to haggle you. If you want to move forward, let's do this. If not, it's totally fine. We can still be
catching
that. We can still be great.
And honestly, success begets success, yeah, right?
And it just worked out in the end. But now that 30% of people are now calling, Hey, how can I get involved? You know, now it's hot now, right? So everybody wants in. And the people who didn't respond are now asking, you know? Yeah. So it's definitely been a process. Dennis made it sound so easy, but yeah, it definitely wasn't that easy for me.
I think too, something that we don't typically talk about or publicize, but I had this very specific conversation with somebody I've known for, you know, upwards of 20 years before he decided to invest. And it was a very specific question. How can we trust you? You're Black. You know, like,
are you serious?
I'm dead serious. You know? Yeah. It was a serious question. And he's African-American. His wife is African-American, the whole nine. And it wasn't so much of like, you know, I don't trust you, Anthony, but the stereotype, the world, you know, many times is like, okay, I don't mind giving it to, you know, Berkshire, but I don't know about you guys. You know what I mean? So I think when, for me, the trust factor, I saw that side of it. You know what I mean? And maybe not everybody was bold enough to articulate it, but he and I are such good friends that he was able to just be like, hey man, this is the concern that we have. And we were able to address it.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real life case studies, and so much more in bonus content. Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access? My goodness. If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience.
Going back to the what both Dennis and Marcie said is it's consistency. It's no problem. If this isn't for you, maybe the next one is. You know, we're not going to stop. We're going to continue to go. And I think that consistency on our end, good business, social media, et cetera, gave everybody or has given many people a chance to just kind of sit back and watch. Mm-hmm. And as they get comfortable through watching and seeing what we're doing and how we're moving, you know, at a high level, being filled with integrity, et cetera, mm-hmm. has given people a chance to say, okay, let's put down the guard. Let's trust this group of people for a multitude of reasons. And I think also just to piggyback on Marcy, you know, to give everybody their flowers, I think the four of us are all seen in our own individual circles as somebody that is trustworthy, that, you know, takes care of business, no shady stuff, no back room type of deals and so forth. So I think a culmination of all those things has put us in the position where people are now trusting even more. But yeah, those initial conversations were interesting.
And not to mention, I mean, people are getting paid, right? Like we're
true.
Not
facts.
The checks are, and so yes. they're having their own checks conversations
yes.
amongst themselves. But people are getting paid quarterly on time. And I think that says a lot because we've all heard the stories about people not getting paid. We've all heard the stories of, you know, other syndicates where people may get paid annually and things like that. But people know they're going to get a quarterly check from us. And so again, those conversations are happening and, you know, the promotion is happening at that level as well for us. So
I think to be a little more specific on Marcy's point, we've paid out over $300,000 to our investors in 2 years. That's a significant amount of money, right? There are some syndicates who haven't paid their investors anything.
In the last 2 years?
In 2 years.
Period.
Yeah. Oh, just, period. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. Right? So the trust grows when the investors are seeing returns in their check.
Yeah.
I think one of the funniest things, just a side comment on that, was one of the investors one of my investors we had early on, you know, we were out golfing one day. It was after the distributions had come out. And he was like, hey, I got a check the other day. you guys really do pay, huh? Like, it was just this thing. It was like, well, yeah, that's what we said. And it was almost a shocking moment. Like, yeah, I told my friend, you guys actually paid. He's going to call you. Like, yeah. You know, it was, you know, it really is about the trust factor, right? And the underlying questions that people ask, especially when it comes to four Black men being in a business like that, I experienced it as well in my other business in terms of an advisor. When people are giving you this amount of money, the real thing is, can I trust you? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the underlying thing that people are asking. Can I trust you? And I think, like you said, we've developed a brand in our personal as well as this that says that you can.
Yeah. And you see me, right? I'm not a overly empowering, massive guy. I tell a joke on our Zoom calls. I'm 5'11", 195 pounds. I cannot do jail time. So you will get a return on your dollars. Right.
The check is being cut.
Yes.
So I want to jump into some deals. So I was looking on the website, and I know it's part of what y'all have going on, but I did want to talk about the Louisiana deal. I think it's 81 units, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So just love to hear just the process of identifying that property, why that particular area, I'm not sure what city it's in, the numbers, what those look like, things like that.
Absolutely. So we currently own 81 units in Monroe, Louisiana. Monroe. We have 62 units in Fort Smith, Arkansas, 44 units in St. Louis. We're in escrow on 100 units in St. Louis as well. And we also own 5 acres of land in Tuskegee, Alabama. The Monroe project, affectionately renamed as the Lenox by Haltaire, is an asset that it made too much financial sense, right? You're looking at 81 units, primarily 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom apartments. On a large plot of land. It was a value add property, right? But the seller did a decent amount of the capital improvements, but the yields were just so high on it, right? Our investors were getting double digit returns on that asset. So from a pro forma standpoint, it made financial sense. From a unit mix, it made a lot of sense. From the size of the building and location of the building, it made a lot of sense. It was a no-brainer for us to buy it. And I think to date, our partners would say that from a cash flow perspective, it's been a cash cow. Wow. It's been a cash cow.
And how'd you find that property? Like, or how'd you find that property, and how do you guys generally
I can't
find
tell
the
deal? Can't give it a secret.
He asked for Derek for real.
it's relationship. Listen, over 29 years in the business, you form relationships with brokers across the country, especially if you're doing good business, as Ennis and Marcide alluded to. It's relationship based, right? Yeah. If you're going to syndicate transactions, one of the most important pieces to the puzzle is having someone who can identify a good and or a bad deal, mm-hmm. right? If you cannot identify a good deal, you're dead in the water before you start. So, you know, of course, there's the Craigslist and the LoopNet and all the other, you know, sites you can look at. But then there's the relationships where there's pocket deals. There's deals that's just not on the market that brokers have that they sit on, although they're supposed to market for their client. And then they call someone who they know can close it, and my phone rings. And when it rings, I look at the deal and I send the deal to my partners, and we discuss internally, is it a project that makes sense for us? Can we raise the capital that's required to buy it? And we strap on our boots and get to work.
Definitely. So the ideal situation is to get off-market deals.
Ideally, off-market are by far the better deals.
Got it.
More juice in the deal. It's better negotiations. More yields.
Makes sense. So we've actually had a couple of guests on the show who invest in the Monroe area, who like kind of are based in Louisiana.
Okay.
Got to make some connections after this. But
please do.
What was it in that market that you saw? And feel free to chime in. Anybody where Monroe in particular was a good city to invest in and buy this many units? Because, you know, you have your major cities in different states, right? Mm-hmm. Monroe's not one of them when you mm-hmm. think about Louisiana. So we'd love to hear more about that.
What you guys think when you saw
it? Well, I think one of the things that actually drew us to it was, first of all, it was close to a university, yeah. right? So that made a ton of sense for us in terms of being able to make sure that there was always going to be tenants there, mm-hmm. right? You know, kind of year round in that, you know, didn't have a shortage of people who needed a place to stay, right? Which was good. Going out there and looking at the city and really understanding the growth, right? We rode around with some of the real estate professionals out there, understood where the growth was coming, understood what they were doing out there in the city, understood the tenant profile mix and how long those people have been there, the consistency of that particular property. That was all key to us understanding that this is a good city, right? These people have a lot to offer out here, and we could come out here and establish a brand and really build a name out here as well. So it just seemed like a great partnership between Halter and Monroe when we went out there and actually viewed everything, looked at it, and saw the opportunity.
Yeah, the only thing that my partners didn't mention, high rental market. I think the entire city of Monroe, very large percentage are renters, not just in our complex, but throughout the city as well. So much that even the mayor or, you know, possibly even the governor is involved with trying to see how they can transition people into home ownership within the city of Monroe. So, you know, great opportunity for us to jump on and capitalize on at that particular point. We also saw, you know, the investment going into the city, right? Mm-hmm. They had just renovated their airport. Mm-hmm. There were other renovations taking place throughout the city as well. A lot of building going on. So a lot of infrastructure taking place. I don't have to go too deep into it, but when you start seeing, you know, broadband, wastewater, you know, all that type of infrastructure going in, you know that the city is investing and looking for more people to come to the city, which obviously would help us along the way and in the future.
Definitely. And do you all typically go out to like visit potential properties?
You have to get boots on the ground.
Typically 1, 2, 3, or 4 of us will go out to a building, sometimes in participation with the lender as mm-hmm. well, because they also want to inspect the building. And, you know, we check everything from top to bottom. I think we have some videos that we'll probably post soon, but on the roof, you know, looking at the plumbing, looking at the brain of the building, if there is one, going in the individual apartments to mm-hmm. see how much needs to be added upon, you know, leases ending and all of that stuff. So yeah, 100%. I mean, the biggest thing for us, I think back to Dennis's point, is that we have to make sure that we can continuously pay investors. And the only way we can do that is if we buy a sound building. So we've been in escrow on other buildings that we pulled out of because mm-hmm. of the due diligence process where we didn't see what we wanted to see, or there were too many ifs, ands, or maybes. Mm-hmm. And we'll quickly, you know, do a 180 and go find another building. And then it goes back to communication. Hey, investors, yes, we press pause on this one and we're going over here. But to answer your direct question, 100% mandatory to review and inspect every building.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, it's a daily job. Right, I think people have the misunderstanding that you just put your money in and it's just gonna sprout up and grow. Right? Yeah. No, it's a daily job. Right? We work at our projects to make sure that it's hitting the projections that we pencil from day one. Right? We hire third party management companies. Right? Who have a unique understanding of the laws within that individual city and state, and then each partner will oversee that management company to ensure the management company is increasing the rents based on our projections, right? Doing the type of repairs and renovations that we want for our projects. So we are always overseeing the management company to make sure the asset is performing based on our projections. So it is a daily grind that we implement to make sure that we're paying our investors on time.
Yeah, and I would say another reason why we like to go is to build relationships. We live here in LA, Ennis lives in Las Vegas, but we can build relationships when we do that with the local community leaders, law enforcement, mm-hmm. You know, property managers, et cetera, right? The list goes on. And so, you know, when they can see in the tenants, yeah. right? The tenants are able to see, you know, 1 or 4, you know, minority men coming on site and actually caring about what's happening. They may not have seen their landlord or owner in years, right?
Or ever, right?
And so when they can see, wow, somebody's coming here to actually speak to me and actually what I think, what could be improved, what I like about the property and stuff like that. That helps our brand. It helps with us to feel better before we purchase a property as well, to see what they think about a property. So it goes a long way.
Definitely. And these are on-site property managers, right?
Yes.
Well, on-site and off-site. Yeah, we have on-site managers and off-site managers.
For the same building?
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. How does that work?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, there's emergencies, right? Yeah. So anything happens, you have to make sure you're there instantaneously. Mm-hmm. So the off-site company essentially makes sure they give the higher vision of what has to happen.
Yeah.
And then the on-site manager executes the plan.
Right.
Okay. We give the plan to the off-site management company. Mm-hmm. So we're paying an on-site management manager. We're paying the off-site management company. Mm-hmm. And we do that, yet again, not to sound redundant, to make sure our investors get their dividends.
I think the situation is different for us if people really, you know, think about it, right? I think Anthony alluded to it. You know, it's the... you know, the thing that's in the ether, right? When you're dealing with, you know, four Black professionals who have come into this space and who want to bring others along with them, others who don't have the education or understanding of what that is, we have to make sure and maintain mm-hmm. that we do everything we can to make sure that the brand, because this is all, you know, very new, right? Yep. That we maintain that brand integrity as much as possible, right? And if that means that we have to go above and beyond what most people in syndication would typically do to make that happen, to make our investors feel a little more comfortable in that, then that's what we're willing to do, right? To make sure that happens. I know that other syndicators don't have to do as much as we have to do, right? Mm-hmm. To make that happen. But that's okay, right? We brought a lot of, like Dennis said, our first, you know, few were friends and family like that, right? Mm-hmm. So these are people that trusted us to make sure that things go in the way that they're supposed to. So we want to make sure that we are doing as much as possible to make sure that things are running as smoothly as possible. And that would include, in these cases, making sure that there's an on-site person for our tenants and an off-site person who's running the larger scale of it.
Definitely. Have you ever had to get rid of an on-site manager or a management company yet?
Not yet.
Hopefully never.
Yeah. We've been fairly lucky in the people that we have working for us in the management company.
Maintenance, yes.
Oh boy, maintenance, yes.
But that we vet them too, though. Yeah. When we acquire the building, that's part of that 60 to 90 day due diligence part. You know, we sit down with the on-site manager and the current management company, mm-hmm. You know, essentially interview them, allow them to interview us. So we have, you know, some type of clarity. That's our word, by the way. That's the word of Haltair is clarity. Just to make sure that we understand what we're getting into, what they're getting into and so forth. So if there's ever a situation, I think, where a new manager would be needed, I believe it would probably happen very early on in the process, as opposed to, you know, later down the line.
That makes sense. I wanted to ask too, how did you come up with the name Haltair? Tell us. I was thinking about it. I was trying to figure it out. I'm like, is it an acronym or something? Quiet. Is it like a
ELO?
I couldn't really get it. I wasn't even there.
No, actually, I came up with the name because I did, right? So I came up with the name. We were actually sitting down trying to figure out, you know, kind of, you know, how can we utilize each other's, you know, names in that way or something like that, our initials or something, to make something that represents all of us. And, you know, we were going back and forth. We probably paid someone to give us a list of 200 and something names how can we do this and that? And I actually was sitting there and I was like, you know, using each one of our initials, and I just put them all together in a way. And I was like, is this even a word? You know, so I had to look it up, and it was the definition that came back was like, they used to use it in, you know, back in the first Olympics or something. And they would use this halter, and it was used to give them greater distance when they were throwing things and stuff like that. So it just kind of made sense because we're trying to use ourselves to give our people greater economic growth as we put them into different spaces that they've probably never been in, right? So we're that catalyst that pushes them out into. So that's what I thought about when, and I was like, hey, what y'all think about Haltair? And then Dennis, right, he's not really caring. He's like, yeah, sounds good to me.
Cool.
I'm busy looking at a deal, right?
Get a logo.
Somebody get a logo, right? So that's kind of how it came about. Yeah. And we just agreed on it.
Neat personality.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't care about that. I'm trying to find a deal.
Love it. So, you know, this has been a super inspirational interview. And I'm just thinking about it. Y'all started 2 years ago during a time when the world was in crisis. Mm-hmm. You each individually have your own strengths and things that you bring to the business. And I know this will be like inspiration to those who watch the show, especially as they look into your backgrounds and see what you've done before and now what you're doing now. So what advice do each of you have to somebody who wants to get started just in real estate investing? Maybe they heard this and want to aspire to start their own syndication. What's some advice you each would give to somebody in that position?
I'll start with that. And because that's actually one of the things that happens a lot is that, you know, people see what we're doing and they're like, how can I do it? Right. You want to, first of all, make sure that you have your foundation in order. Right. One of the biggest pieces that we have is we have our legal team and our, you know, financial team in order, right? CPA, making sure that those things are ready to go and that we are building with people that we trust, know, and understand. One of the biggest pieces that I would say is tap into other people who are already doing it, right? The biggest thing that we want to do is help and educate these people. So watching someone else do it is usually the best experience on how to do it. Right. And, you know, following a script so you don't have to recreate the wheel is always the best way to go. Right. We've had some of our investors who are actually trying to, you know, put that whole thing together right now. Right. Doing a deal with us and then going off and, you know, is eventually doing deals by themselves. Right. I mean, it's here. Yeah. The information is here. Yeah. So that's what I would say.
My advice would be just to start, honestly. You know, I say it all the time, slow motion is better than no motion. And I think that with everything that is out, whatever it is, you could pick anything, somebody had to start the process and get up and do it. And I think many people talk about it all the time. Everybody has the, oh man, we should pull some money together and we should do this and we should do that and da, 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 da. And then a year later, you end up sitting around a table and, oh man, we should do something. It almost kind of happened with us, to be honest. I mean, like I said, Dennis and I have been doing deals for a long time together and individually and so forth. And it took COVID conversation just to be like, yo, let's just start it and let's put it together. Let's map it out. Let's put it on paper and let's go. Now for us, fortunately, you know, each of the four of us had our specific backgrounds and we could add to the puzzle, if you will. But if you don't have that, then to what Ennis said, find it. Find who you align with, who you have like-minded, you know, conversations with and so forth, and get started. Last but not least, call us, call the Haltera group. And you know, we'll show you everything that we know except the secret sauce. and get started. But that would be my advice to everybody is start.
Get out of your way. Like Anna said, start, get out of the way. You know, we're $10,000 per unit or per share to invest. What are you doing with $10,000 through a calendar year? Right, you're spending money on Jordans and this and that and whatever else and dinners and whatever. That money can go to a property that can yield you a return, right? Stop leaving your money in Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, et cetera. That's making you less than 1%, but it's a safety net because you can go get it instantaneously. Well, you're not making any money. The bank is taking your dollars and reinvesting those dollars to make other people more money, including themselves. Do it for your own. Take $10,000, take $5,000, or whatever denomination it may be, and invest those dollars. Get into real estate, condos, single family home, townhome, if that's your start, or jump into commercial like we did, right? But partner with someone or just get out of your way. Start making some money. The next wave of millionaires and billionaires are born now. They're starting now. Rates are going up. People are scared. They're coming out to market. Not us. We're buying more.
Yeah. I would just say that you guys said a lot, pretty much everything, but I would say I lean on. I lean on something that my mother, rest in peace, taught me when I was younger, and that's just to be intentional about everything, right? So be intentional about, you know, who you hang with, be intentional about the meetings that you set up, what you learn on a daily basis, everything that you do, you got to be intentional. And so if you want to get started in something like this, do it with intent, with getting started, right? With the books that you're reading, with whatever you're studying, the conversations that you're setting up. Because it's as Ennis mentioned, the information is literally everywhere. YouTube, not to name drop anybody, but you know, YouTube, there's social media, there's, you know, tons of books and everything that's out there that's already the path is there, right? The footprints have been left in the sand for you to follow. And so be intentional about it. And then at the end of the day, be committed, you know, once you do start, because you don't want to stray off. Every day isn't a good day. Sometimes you're a little sleep over it. So you got to be committed and you got to know yourself, you know, along the way. And so, but that all falls under the intentional umbrella, which is what I would just leave for anybody.
Love it. Love it. Before we wrap, where can people find you? Where can people keep up with what you have going on? Reach out if they have questions or want to connect further.
All our social media tags and handles are at Haltere Group, HalTereGroup. Our website is haltergroup.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera. So that would be the easiest way. If you do decide to go to the website, there's contact forms and so forth where we can easily get your information. We're all very free with our direct contacts as well. So once you reach out, even on social media, direct messages and so forth, which is how we ended up connecting. Yeah. So we're available in many ways and always ready to have conversations.
Love it. Appreciate you guys coming on the show.
Thank you.
You know, I can't wait to watch it again because there's a lot of game. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed this. And I know the listeners are going to have a great time and really learn a whole lot from this episode. So definitely appreciate you guys. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Subscribe if you haven't already. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. Share with your family. Share with your friends. I look forward to hearing from you guys soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention 2 of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.